Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Happy Monday. Another wacky weekend in Washington and a busy, busy, busy show today. Mayor Emanuel later. Steve Dale later. Those two stories aren't related. Senator Durbin later. Leslie Munger later. Dr. Most this hour. Let's get to the top six at six right now.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
The top six at six on 720 WGN.
We'll get to traffic in just a second. Before we do that, the protests got bigger and bigger and louder, including at O'Hare. Airports all over the country on the Donald Trump immigration ban to make America safer. Mayor Emanuel will speak on this later as well, but the protests will not go away, and today they get back to work in Washington, and we'll see if any of the gutless members of Congress step up and actually talk about this. There have been a few, to be fair. A few Republicans and a bunch of Democrats who have things to say. But think about this legislatively. If you wanted to try to overturn this executive order, you would have to get a lot of Republicans on board to get it through the Senate and the House. It looks like it could get through the Senate, but if it gets through the House, why would Trump sign it? Why would Trump sign a law overturning his executive order? In other words, it's got to go to the courts. The courts, which slowed this down over the weekend, are the only way to stop this, though there's been some considerable damage already done in regards to the opinion of America around the world. And if anybody wants to lean back and just go, well, it only affected 130 people. Okay, well, if we're going to start going by those standards, then why have a constitution at all?
Right, and these protests were huge. They were just ginormous. By the way, Iraq's parliament has also asked Baghdad now to reciprocate, and right. They don't want U.S. citizens going there.
Yeah, which changes my vacation plans completely.
Right, yeah, so...
Congress has been very slow to act under big pressure to stop Trump here, as I mentioned. But aside from the legislative side of this, there are some other things that need to be dealt with this week. And Congress will certainly be a part of this by way of the Senate, as the president is expected to announce his first what could be two or three over the course of a 4-year presidency. Supreme Court pick. That announcement could come today, more likely tomorrow. Detainees at O'Hare and around the country said to have been released last night. Boy, if you're asked to be an NHL All-Star goalie, would you do it at this point?
I would decline. Thank you very much.
I'd say, listen, I got plans. I said, I appreciate the honor, but no.
I love the 3-on-3. I think it's a cool idea, but you don't want to be the goaltender.
You got no chance.
You don't want to be a goaltender in regular overtime 3-on-3.
You have no chance, and basically it's just a showcase to be embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
Corey Crawford got shellacked for 5 goals. His replacement, Mr. Dubnyk from the Wild, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Gave up 5 more, and the Central ended up losing 10-3 in the first of the 3 games. Who ended up winning overall?
The overall went to the Metropolitan.
Ah, got it. And Northwestern rolling. 6 in a row in the Big Ten. Longest winning streak since, I believe, the Hoover administration.
Yes, you are correct. 1933.
Go Cats.
They need to stay hot because Purdue's next, right?
They get Purdue at Purdue on Wednesday night, and they were tied in the standings until yesterday when Purdue lost at Nebraska, a team the Wildcats beat twice. Now they go to Purdue, very tough place to win, but Minnesota did go in there and beat them earlier, and the Wildcats right now alone in third in the Big Ten at the halfway mark of the season, of their conference season.
Yeah, and clearly playing as well or better than anybody.
And it's been somebody else every night, it seems like. It's really a fun team to watch. I'll tell you, Steve, you saw the crowd Thursday night for Nebraska.
Building's
and
loud.
The place was jammed. Yeah. Last night was sold out. There wasn't a seat to be had. The place was absolutely thunderous. I mean, it was really a great atmosphere.
And at some point, did athletic director Jim Phillips rush the court?
He did. He did.
Gets very excited. I don't know if you noticed, Andrea. Jim Phillips gets very excited when he's out there.
He totally does.
They had the World Series trophy there on the court during the first time out, by the way.
They left it out there?
No. Well, no. When the play started again, they took the trophy off.
Would have been awkward dribbling around that.
Yes, it would have been.
They thought you were going to come back and pick it up.
The World Series trophy sets a pick.
Yes.
So that should be fun for you on Wednesday night, huh?
It should be. West Lafayette, and we'll have it right here on GM.
And finally, the Screen Actors Guild Awards last night. I got to say, my pick's pretty solid. I think I missed 3 of the 15 awards.
I was right there, too.
Yeah, I missed Best Actor.
But the SAG Awards went well, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus made a very funny speech to kick things off.
How great is she?
Several of the actors took shots at the weekend's activities in Washington.
By the way, she and her husband were watching the Northwestern game on their phone. And you could see the camera cut to them once, Brad Hall, because my wife texted me a picture, and they had the game. They had the BTN, the Big Ten Network app, open.
Oh, that's
and they
funny.
Were watching the Northwestern game.
Because?
Their son, Charlie plays Hall. For the Wildcats.
And Charlie got into a couple games so far this year,
he's
right?
Been, yeah.
Two or three?
Well, four, I think.
Good.
Yeah.
The Steve Cochran Show.
These 7 countries, what about the 46 majority Muslim countries that are not included? Right there, it totally undercuts this nonsense that this is a Muslim ban.
People that needed people to know ready. Knew. What we couldn't do was telegraph our position ahead of time to ensure that people flooded in before that happened, before it went into place.
And I would suspect, as long as they're not awful people, that they will move through before another half a day today. And perhaps some of these people should be detained further. And if they're folks that shouldn't be in this country, they're going to be detained. And so apologize for nothing here.
It's part of the charm of the Trump administration. Apologize for nothing. This is not an attack on the Trump administration. This is an attack on a stupid policy that's completely anti-American and nothing of what we stand for, not the least of which is the fact that it's unconstitutional, and I think the courts will find that fairly quickly today. This notion that a few people were detained and I think Kellyanne Conway used the word inconvenienced. Inconvenience is not making your family desperately afraid as you're held for 24 hours in handcuffs. And you are a legal citizen of the United States of America. And by the way, in one case, you're an interpreter in Iraq helping us defeat ISIS. These are some of the examples that came out of the weekend. Inconvenience is, what do you mean I have to take my shoes off? I thought I had TSA clearance. Mm-hmm. That's inconvenience. Inconvenience is I have to take my laptop out. Really? That's inconvenience. So let's not soft pedal this. What was done to a lot of people this weekend is more than an inconvenience. They're all going to survive. They're all fine. Even those, including a doctor who came in to work at the Cleveland Clinic, who was literally turned around and sent back to Northern Africa, as opposed to going to do her job at the Cleveland Clinic, they're all going to be fine. Having said that, the message we sent to the rest of the world this weekend and the message we sent to America is outrageous. And, the only thing I'd give Donald Trump credit for is it's not like he didn't say he'd do this. He said he'd do it, and he did.
True, but think of TSA, too. That was a big problem as well. TSA, Homeland Security, getting this directive and saying this goes into effect immediately. They're scrambling to say, okay, hold on. That creates a domino effect, mass chaos, flight delays, flight cancellations, protests. These protests were enormous.
Well, if you back it up all the way to Rudy Giuliani. And see if you can find this sound, too, Jake, if you would. Rudy Giuliani, over the weekend, I think it was on ABC, said that President Trump had asked him to come up with a way to do a legal Muslim ban. So for everybody in the administration who says this wasn't a Muslim ban, this was specifically the intent at the outset, according to Rudy Giuliani, and frankly, I don't know why he'd lie about it. He's been inside the Trump organization since the election and before. He was one of Trump's main supporters and thought he had a cabinet position. I don't think this is Rudy's revenge. I think it was Giuliani answering a question.
Here's another point, too, Steve. What about the countries where the terrorists, that the known terrorists who have attacked inside this country have come from? Pakistan, Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, United Arab Emirates.
Right.
Yeah, Egypt.
Why not those countries?
Well, you could make the conspiratorial tie that Trump has businesses in each of those countries as well, which some people have tied together. You don't need to go there. What you need to do is consider the fact that we have, of the six countries on the banned list, and by the way, there's a lot of bad people in those mm-hmm. six countries.
Absolutely.
Of the countries on that banned list, there have been no terrorist attacks in this country. You have to remember something, and this goes to what we're probably going to find out about the attack in Canada last night. Overnight in Quebec, there was a double shooting, a coordinated attack on a mosque, six people dead, several injured. Obviously a terrorist attack, and it's been called the same by the Canadian government. The identity of the shooters, they've both been arrested alive, have not been given out, so we don't know anything about them yet. But would it surprise you if you found out they were homegrown, if they were radicalized in country? We've got radicalized or about to be radicalized terrorists in this country. We've got a situation where if you held a European passport from countries like France and the UK, our friends where we know there are terrorist cells, you can get into this country in 10 minutes.
And many are already here.
I mean, depending on the line at the airport, it's not an issue at all. So, you know, again, if you want to appeal and continue to appeal to the 37% that voted for you, keep doing the hardcore right stuff. Keep doing this kind of stuff. You're guaranteeing you're going to lose the midterm elections if you get that far. And you're also guaranteeing that you're going to end up in court over and over again.
Right.
So you can go to sleep at night in the White House or wherever you end up living, feeling good about yourself because you got more cheers at the next rally you do. But you're losing Americans every day who may have been able to come over to your side. Of course, we want to be safe, but you also want to be factual and realistic. Nobody from these countries has committed a terrorist act. The majority of terrorist acts that have gone on since 9/11 have been by American citizens or crazy white folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's start dealing with that. Let's start dealing with the fact that tourists can come in and out of this country way too easily. And let's stop stopping people who have visas, legal visas.
All right, and green cards, too.
And get in. And by the way, the visa system's a mess.
Oh, my gosh.
Fix that.
Yeah, absolutely. What about John McCain's point where he said that this could even be more dangerous now?
Yeah, of course. Because you basically create a propaganda film.
Right.
You create a propaganda film for ISIS where all you need to do is take CNN or MSNBC or Fox footage of the airport protests and go, this is America coming apart at the seams because the president of the United States hates Muslims. Mm-hmm. Join me now, crazy 18-year-old with nothing else going on in his life to kill Americans and kill Westerners.
Yeah, it's a valid point.
It's just ridiculous. And a lot of the case with my Republican friends who, you know, want to cite Ronald Reagan's take on all of this. Here's a clip.
The United States and our neighbors, particularly our neighbor to the south, should have a better understanding and a better relationship than we've ever had. The possibility of trouble below the border, and we could have a very hostile and strange neighbor on our border. Rather than making them or talking about putting up a fence, why don't we work out some recognition of our mutual problems, make it possible for them to come here legally with a work permit, and then while they're working and earning here, they pay taxes here. And when they want to go back, they can go back and they can cross and open the border both ways by understanding their problems.
Arguably one of the great presidents of all time, depending on your point of view, but history would certainly say the popularity is undeniable. And he suggested that we allow more in and that we take more in and we don't put up fences. Look, we have a border problem to the south. We have an immigration problem that can be dealt with. This ain't the way to do it. 6:28, we're back after this on 720 WGN.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. Morning, Doc. How was your weekend?
It was great. You know, kind of getting tired of cold weather, but it was nice. How about yours?
Yeah, it was fine. Busy. But, you know, if 25 is the extent of our winter with a dusting, that's fine. I'll take that.
Yeah, no kidding. I guess we've only shoveled, what, twice this year? So not bad.
No. No, but Jacksonville, Florida has had more of a winter than we have had, so we're fine.
Yeah.
All right, I want to talk about how to be a good patient and how to be an effective patient. Before we get to that, though, several times on this show, you and I have had discussions, usually on a Monday, but sometimes other parts of the week, because a celebrity has taken ill or gone through a health scare. The reason we do this is what, Doc?
It's for us, it's actually awareness. It's not to sensationalize the individual who has the disease, but for us, it's awareness of that illness. And if we can educate people a little bit about the illness and about screening and about the importance of screening, then I think the good things come of it. You know, it's not to say, oh my gosh, guess what so-and-so has, but let's talk about the disease. Let's talk about what we could do to prevent it, or let's talk to what we can do about screening it so that we can treat it easier.
And this brings us to a discussion of Erin Andrews. Erin Andrews has had quite a couple of years, along with all of her professional success, stalked and had naked pictures of her thrown all over the internet. And as you know, once they're out there, you can't get them back. She won that court case, but in the meantime, had other tragedies going on in her inner circle, including the death by in a car crash of her fiance's nephew that was buttressed up against some sketchy medical tests that she got a call from her doctor and found out she had cervical cancer, which I didn't even know till I read the story.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know, for her having cervical cancer, it just shows the importance of screening. And, you know, the story with her was, boy, she had cervical cancer, she had surgery, and she was back working 5 days later. And it's not about that. It's not about how strong of a woman she is. And believe me, she is a very strong woman to be able to do that. But really, it's about the importance of screening for cervical cancer, because we know it's a cancer that if the screening is done appropriately and cells are found early on that are precancerous, this is a cancer that can be 100% cured.
And you're not out of the woods, Doc, right, if you've had an organ removed, say the cervix itself or maybe a hysterectomy, correct? I mean, you're still at risk.
Well, you're not as at much risk. If you have a hysterectomy where the cervix is removed, there still is a portion of cells that need to be treated and need to be monitored, but your chance drops down dramatically because with the actual cells where we're looking for that have essentially been removed from your body. But that being said, it's still always good to get back in there because there is an area there that the doctor should look at all the time, you know, every 3 years to make sure that there's nothing else going on.
So what is the message in regards to testing? What's the baseline testing age?
Yeah, the baseline testing age for cervical cancer is 21. And if you have a normal test, then it's every 3 years. If you have abnormal tests, they're going to do some additional screening. They're going to possibly even do some additional treatment to stop some of those precancerous cells from becoming cancer. And then the other big thing, Steve, is that we have the HPV vaccine right now. And, you know, all parents should get that HPV vaccine for their children, you know, before the age of 12, to be honest with you.
All right, let's go to those who have cervix. Let's go to the cervix community here on the show. Have you been tested?
I have not.
What
no,
are you waiting
unfortunately.
For?
No, I absolutely should. I mean, I go every year for my yearly exam, which I'm actually late for this year. But, I mean, I go for the mammograms. But I guess that's my question. I didn't really know about that. I thought it was just for younger kids in the preventative stages. I mean, am I too old to get the vaccine, Doc?
You're too old to get the vaccine, yes.
Okay.
They won't give you the vaccine. But, you know, anybody, because really HPV is a sexually transmitted disease. I hate to say it that way, but it is, unfortunately. And really, once the virus is there, it's going to stay there. It's not going to go away, and the vaccine is not going to prevent that from going away.
However, you should be tested, right?
Right.
Absolutely. You know, anybody really from the age of 21 on should be having pap smears every 3 years, like I said, unless you see that the doctor sees some abnormal cells and he's going to do some additional testing. And he might shorten that up and he might say, you know what, I want you back in a year to have another test done.
I'm sure you're having those, Andrea, though.
Yeah.
So that covers the pap smears.
Listen, I don't believe you're a doctor. I don't believe you said that. Mary Vandeveld, let's go to your cervix. Have you been tested?
Yes, I believe I was just the doctor a couple weeks ago. So I guess I was tested. She didn't say, but I would assume I was, right, Doc, if I had a pap smear?
Yes. If you had a pap smear, then you were tested. And then
Sandberg, you all papped up?
Oh, that's yes. Not nice. Yes. And my stepdaughter got the vaccine.
How old?
She's 12. Well, she's going to be 13 in a month, but she got it this year before school started, and she FaceTimed us after, like, and we asked how her doctor's appointment was. It was me and my husband, her dad, and she said to him very proudly, I got the HPV vaccine, and it's to prevent me from getting cervical cancer if I get any STDs later on. And he, freaked out.
And then Pat had a grabber.
His head starts spinning
around. That's my
little
girl.
Yeah.
But, you know what, though? Girls,
I'm impressed that she was a... own your body, you know? And
take your daughter to the gynecologist, to the doctor. I mean, really.
Well, this was her pediatrician, but yeah, she didn't.
This should be a new holiday. Take your daughter to the gynecologist.
Teenage day. Years? No, really, because I know people who waited, including me.
Well, last word on this, Doc, before we come back and talk about how to be a good patient when you get the paper on the thing stuck to your butt in the doctor's office while you're waiting. Dr. Kevin Mose from Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. Hey, Doc, one other thing. Andre was just talking about this off the air. Superintendent Eddie Johnson, who nearly collapsed at a police briefing the other day.
Yeah.
The kidney disease portion of this is a longer discussion, which we can take up next week or down the road. But he referenced a couple of times taking blood pressure medicine on an empty stomach leading to his fainting spell. Does that all make sense?
Well, it can make sense. You know, it's more about that the kidney is so important in monitoring our blood pressure and helping us with our blood pressure. So whether he took it on an empty stomach and it got absorbed too quickly, some medications you want to take with food, others you want to take on an empty stomach. So it really varies depending on the medication. But it's probably more important is, does his dose need to be monitored? Does his dose need to be changed? Because, you know, he obviously got a little lightheaded, which can often be a sign that his blood pressure had dropped a little bit. So it's the medication. It's a very important that you know on your medication whether it should be taken on a full stomach, on an empty stomach, an hour before meals, an hour after. Can be very confusing, but you should have had that education from your doctor or the pharmacy with any medication.
Let's go to the paper on the bench. What is it? The bench? What do they call that thing in the doctor's office? You know, the paper thing that goes over. What do we call the place where we lay down?
The examining table?
The table?
Yeah, exam table? Tables or carts, yeah.
Yeah, the table, cart, okay.
And they do change the paper, Steve.
Yeah. Yeah, it always sticks to me. It always sticks to your butt. Yeah. Anyway, that's not the important part of this segment. The important part is how do we get more out of the doctor's visit? Now, I like to go through the drawers and play with the tongue depressors before the doctor comes in. Is that a good idea?
We know you all do that. So, I mean, there's not anything in those rooms that's any secret, but we know that you're doing that because we have magazines that are 2 years old. You've already read those, so of course you have to do something.
So technically you're actually encouraging it.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So, like, if you walk in and I have a stethoscope on and I'm running my own vitals, is that probably not a way to go?
Yeah, that's probably not the best. And, you know, that's one thing I would say is we sometimes cringe when we have kids running around the room pulling on some of that equipment. We're like, do you know how much that stuff costs? please don't do that.
The in-office visit's about to go up. But in a limited amount of time, what you don't want is the patient walking out to the car going, oh, I should have asked this, I should have asked that. So what do you want us doing to get more out of the visit?
Well, you know, to prepare for a doctor's meeting is more important or is more than just, okay, if I leave the office at this time, I'll be at the doctor's appointment at the right time.
Right.
You know, you need to prepare in advance. What we really like is patients who keep track of all their medications. I went to a specialist. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. I went to a specialist. Here's the medicine. Would you please make sure that goes in your record? But more importantly, any questions, any concerns, any thoughts that you have about your health, this is your opportunity face-to-face to ask them. Because if you don't, you're going to run back to some guy in the office and ask him, or you're going to go on the internet. But get it from the expert that's right in front of you. You're paying for that service.
What is something that, while you're sitting there, helps the actual appointment, other than just listening and going, and not absorbing any of it?
Yeah, it is. You have to question throughout the exam. You have to question throughout the whole experience. So, you know, I always tell people, write all your questions down and write them down. It might be a month before you're at the doctor's office. You say, you know what? Gosh, my foot hurts. I wonder what, you know, and it hurts when I do this. Write all these questions down. And I always tell people, make two copies. Give one to the nurse right when you're walking in, because the nurses are a great source of information, can often dispel many of your questions right away. But it also then allows the nurse to give it to the doctor and say, hey, Mr. Cochran has these questions, so that before you even walk in the room as a physician, I have an idea of where your concerns are, and I can address those as I'm going through my exam.
So, Doc, when you walk in and then the nurse comes in and you tell her everything that's wrong and then the doctor comes back in, do you have to tell him everything that's wrong again too? Or has she already told him in that little hallway conversation?
Well, she's told him in that hallway conversation, and fortunately right now, or unfortunately, depending how you look at it, we have the computers now. So actually, like I'll see patients tomorrow. As the nurse is putting information into the computer, I'm standing outside reading it in real time.
Oh, really?
Yep. Now, I will tell you that I can't tell you how many times I've walked out after seeing a patient and the nurse said, he said what? He didn't tell me that. He never told me that. He didn't say that. So we often get a different history as a physician than the nurses do. And it's because people sometimes are embarrassed to tell a nurse something, and they might feel more confident telling a doctor. Or we might ask more probing questions because we're with them for a longer period of time than the nurse is.
Listen, there's nothing comfortable about being a 55-year-old guy telling a 30-year-old nurse about something that's personal. But a long time ago, I got comfortable with the idea that there's nothing I could say to a nurse that they haven't heard before. They're just doing their job, right?
Absolutely. When you think of the individuals that are caring for you in most offices, physicians, they've been in school anywhere from 20 to 25 years. And believe me, if they've been in practice for 5, 6, 7, 10 years, they've heard every question. Nurses, the exact same thing. They're highly educated, and they have heard everything. Even if we snicker a little bit, it's not because we're laughing at you. It's because, you know what? We've heard that before, and, you know, it's a common question. Let me tell you why you have that concern. So don't be afraid to ask, because nothing worse. Like then you said, you get in the car and say, wow, I wish I would ask this. Well, you missed your opportunity.
And one last thing, because we're going to run out of time here. Before you leave, talk to the insurance people in the office about any insurance questions you have. It's probably not the person at the front desk, though, right? Who do you ask for?
No, it's usually the manager. There's a practice manager that will know more about your insurance than anybody. Physicians, I have to be totally honest with you. When I walk into a room, I have no clue what kind of insurance people have. Yeah. So it's important that you know what your deductible is and know where your costs are. That being said, if you have a concern about costs of medication, definitely bring it up to the doctor. Say, hey, you know, last time I was in, I went to the pharmacy and I got my new statin drug and it was $128. Is there an option? And he'll look at it and go, oh my gosh, you know, I apologize for that. We could put you on the generic and it's now going to be $10.
Right. And you know so, that, and you've got to advocate for yourself. I like to ask the doctor before I leave, hey, can I have any free stuff?
Yeah.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Governor Bruce Rauner.
I continue to be hopeful. I continue to be optimistic. This is hard. The process, the political process, the special interest groups and the folks from all sides, all, you know, both sides of the aisle, everybody's weighing in, which is not surprising. And I hope the senators continue to pursue their negotiations in good faith on a bipartisan basis. We need changes. We need a balanced budget. Every day matters. And I applaud the senators for trying to do something good. And I'm encouraging them. And I hope they stay the course.
That was Governor Rauner last Wednesday on the program. We are 5 days later and not a peep out of Springfield, except for the part where the attorney general now is picking up on something former comptroller Leslie Munger did. And said, not only are the legislators not going to get paid, nobody's going to get paid. Leslie Munger joins us now. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Thanks for coming back on. When you did the no pay for legislators thing, what was the nature of the support or lack of it from the attorney general?
Well, I got a lot of pushback from a lot of groups originally. But I think just to be clear, I didn't stop paying the legislators. I just put all of the elected official pay, including my own pay, in line with the rest of the state's bills.
That's right. They went to the back of the line, right? Wasn't that the deal?
That's right. We went in line. So we ran the payroll on the due date. And when we get to that date of paying those bills, we all get our paychecks. And I'll mention that we still have not been paid for June. And that is how far behind the state is in paying bills. We're still paying bills back from June. I know that because I don't have my paycheck from June yet. Because my paycheck's in that same line. And this is different. And what Lisa Madigan is doing now is actually what she did the first time. We entered the fiscal year without a budget at all back in July of 2015. She went to court after I asked her to go to court and get an order to continue to pay state employees so that corrections officers and people who make sure checks go out to human service organizations, et cetera, that they actually got their paychecks. And so she, the matter was litigated twice. She lost twice. She lost at the Illinois Appellate Court level in Chicago. She lost before the St. Clair County Court. And so she could have continued to litigate that, but she stopped at that time. And that's why state employees have been paid throughout this whole no budget period. And I think now she's doing it really, I think it's just a crass political move to force a short-term crisis, to force a resolution on the budget. But this is how we get in these problems. We make short-term decisions because we're forced backed into a wall, and we don't do the long-term solution to the problem.
Well, with all due respect, I mean, you have an inside view. I do not. But my outsider's view is this, and it's not a defense of her specifically, but I feel the same way that I felt when you first did this to legislators and put them in the back of the line. Well, good. Somebody's doing something, because the one argument I've heard is, well, she's doing this to support her father. I don't see how this helps Mike Madigan, because Mike Madigan is the problem here. And this is something that could light a fire amongst everybody, because state employees can rightfully start screaming about, what do you mean I'm not going to get paid? Well, maybe I don't need to go to work then. And then maybe the rest of the state pays attention. So what am I missing here, how this would actually help Mike Madigan?
Well, I think the way it helps the speaker is that it makes this such a short-term crisis that it puts pressure on the governor. And I think this is why she did this before, back in 2015 or 2016. It puts pressure on the governor to come up with a budget solution that actually is mostly taxes and not reforms, because the reforms are hard to get. And so far, there's been no indication or little indication in the House. Certainly, there's been some movement in the Senate, which is very helpful. But there's been little indication in the House that they're willing to look at some of the things we need to do to actually get a balanced budget in place beyond just raising taxes and to get our economy growing again. You know, we're just again noted that we are losing more people in the state than any other state in the country. And a lot of them are moving to neighboring states, not just to the Sun Belt. And so we need to realize that we need to keep our businesses here, and we need some reforms. We probably don't need all the things the governor asked for, but we certainly need some of the things that will help make our businesses more competitive. And there's been a lack of willingness to address it in the House. And I think it puts pressure to just raise taxes and get out of the problem.
Yeah, and I don't give the legislators on either side a break on any of this, because this is the same as the Republicans saying, well, we didn't have time to come up with a plan for 6 years of repeal and replace conversation. We haven't had a budget in a long time here. It's not like people in leadership, Mike Madigan, haven't had a chance to come up with something that's appropriate that could be done just as quickly as a short-term solution to get this on the back page as opposed to the front page. Andrea.
Leslie, do you foresee a budget deal being signed, or is this just, do you just see this being stopgap after stopgap after stopgap until the election?
Until the election, until we turn into Rogers Detroit and Chicago, mm-hmm. and until the state of Illinois is out of business.
Right.
Well, you know, I think the good news is that the Senate has shown some willingness to at least start to work together and get a budget. And while, you know, some of the recent negotiations have kind of fallen apart a little, I think people are understanding why this is important. So I'm hopeful. My concern is that by throwing this lawsuit in now, it puts added pressure to do something fast. And every time we do something fast, it's we raise taxes and we don't tackle the hard issues. And I just know from the budget mess we're in now, we have $11 billion of unpaid bills. The pension, unfunded pension liability, has grown to $130 billion, despite the fact we're spending nearly a third, roughly $10 billion of the state's revenue, you know, on funding pensions. We have got to start to tackle these things. These need to be first and foremost to get out of this. And yet what this will force, I hope not, but I'm concerned it will force a short-term tax increase, and it will further encourage people to leave.
Will you run for governor or another state office?
You know, I'm still trying to get my own life back on track after several years of just complete craziness, and enjoying seeing my family and my friends, and I haven't made any decisions out. I'm not running for governor, I'll just tell you that.
But you're not ruling out a return to public life at some point.
I think I'll find some way to help somehow. I would say that I really loved being the comptroller, because I had a wonderful staff of people, and we were really committed to try and help the state. The nastiness that goes with the political side of it is very disheartening. It doesn't matter if you do a good job. It doesn't matter if you get all the endorsements of all the newspapers in the state. You know, it doesn't matter. People don't pay attention to those things. It's really the lies, the partisanship, and the lack of willingness to do the right thing is challenging when you're used to going in and just trying to get something done. So I don't know. I'm just happy to be home right now, and I will find a way to continue to help in some role.
And have you taken over the family finances again? And have you shut down payments to your children and your husband?
I've always managed the family finances.
Oh, okay. Nothing new there.
Actually, and luckily we have two adult sons who are gainfully employed and off the family payroll, so I don't have to shut them down. So proud of their success and happy to be able to see them a little bit more now. So,
all right. All the best. We appreciate your time.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Take care. We'll come back. We'll talk about Democrats who want to be governor. A new straw poll is out. The leader in the race is not the two names you've heard before in this straw poll. We'll get to that in a second. You know how uncomfortable I get when other people pay for things?
Yes, you do. You get itchy. You get weird.
Sandberg is, she runs out occasionally, gets me a bottle of water if we run out here. Because the weekenders here, the Harry Potter people on the weekend here, you know, break in and steal all the water. But anyway, she keeps paying for the water. I just feel like this is going to come back to haunt me at some point.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it probably will.
Yeah. Excuse me, I'll be right with you.
I was going to say, you okay?
I'm a little tied up right now. Doug House joins us on the phone. Doug, by the way, has information on a new straw poll for you Democrats, if you're interested in who may run against Rauner, assuming Rauner does run again. Doug House is the president of the Illinois Democratic County Chairman's Association. He was recently reelected after having been appointed to that position when Mike Mathis left. Let's go to Doug now. All right, Doug, I'm surprised by the name at the top of your list here, but before we get to that, maybe we start at the bottom after you tell me how this poll was done.
This poll was done by reaching out to Democratic activists across the state. We have 102 Democratic county chairmen and chairwomen across all of Illinois. Most prominently are the larger population areas that you would think of in the Chicago metro area. But we go as far, you know, obviously down to Paducah, Kentucky area. So we're a large state. So we reached out to all of those chairmen and asked them to share this through their social media and our extensive media of emails, Facebook, Twitter, and pushed it out across the state to Democratic activists. And we were overwhelmed by the response. We had far more than 5,000 people take the poll and look at this poll and think about our candidates. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah, and with the opinion makers' position that these poll takers have through their social media, but also the fact that they'll be driving their side of the equation during the election, you can easily extrapolate this as opposed to a normal poll.
You can. You can about the people who are involved and the activists that took it. It was really important to note that it isn't a scientific poll in terms of taking a picture of how the voters in Illinois feel, but it was an activist poll, and we were really excited about the thing. But what we really found out here was that the activists wanted to know a lot more about the candidates as well. So it'd be difficult to say, for example, or take a win away from this or a loss away from it as a candidate. The winner was the party and the field of candidates who got more exposure.
Number 10 is other submissions. Other submissions. Are you voting for other submissions, Andrea? You're a city resident.
Not going to vote for other submissions.
Okay, number 9, Chicago Treasurer Kurt Summers at 1%. We like Mr. Summers. We think he's got a thankless job. Does he have any interest in running for governor?
He is a great guy, and we did talk to him, and he expressed interest in having his name shared on the poll.
Okay, okay.
With a lot of potential.
Kwame Raoul comes in 8th at 2%. That's a very well-known name amongst Democrats. What's his level of interest?
We think that it's he has a medium interest perhaps in it, but he asked that he be shared in it as well, and we were excited to have his name on there. He is a very active figure that we respect very much and wanted to have his participation.
Number 7 is Robin Kelly, the congresswoman. Number 6 is State Senator Andy Mazur. Andy Mazur's on this
poll? No, not Andy Mazur.
Different
Andy.
Oh, okay. And then at number 5, it starts to get interesting. The two names we hear the most in regards to, yeah, they're definitely in, are J.B. Pritzker and Chris Kennedy. Number 5 is J.B. Pritzker, but only floating around 10% now. What do you make of that?
J.B. is very personable. He's just starting to get out and move around the state. And if he decides to get in, I think those numbers will certainly come up. He's a formidable candidate.
Doug, number four is a name that I am seeing and hearing. Well, she's been on with us, Congresswoman Sherry Bustos.
Yeah,
I
like
am
her.
Seeing her name everywhere. She's all over social media. She has events almost daily. I mean, she's, would you call her pretty much up and coming within the state and the party?
And within the Congress, she's recently been elected to a leadership role. Her work ethic is second to none. She can throw an elbow with most men. She can keep up with anyone in a debate. So she's formidable, and anyone that would underestimate her would be making a mistake.
Chris Kennedy at number three at 12%. He's got plenty of money and plenty of name and plenty of success to talk about. He's not exactly a lightning rod when it comes to public speeches or being the guy in the room. Is that going to get in the way?
You know, Chris is there's a lot of substance to that, to Chris. He's given this a great deal of thought, and he's examined the issues, and he's been around downstate. I've seen him speak several occasions. And he has a really good message about the narrative for Illinois and moving forward and creating jobs. He is very formidable.
Yeah, and I think he's definitely going to run. Number two is the alderman, is it Amaya Pawar?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And Amaya is a great guy with an excellent ground game, who's gone out and worked really hard and talked to the voters and sold himself in a retail sort of a way, eyeball to eyeball, shaking hands, and has done a really good job with that. People who get to know him really like him. His challenge will be generating the resources and being able to run a statewide campaign, but a very good candidate.
Last is State Senator Daniel Bliss, and obviously the problem is name recognition, especially if you're going against Rauner, regardless of how people may feel about Rauner. He'd have a leg up there. So Bliss, though, with a runaway in this poll at 25%.
Yeah, Dan has been out around the state. He's been working very hard. I've seen him in deep southern Illinois. He's been here to Rock Island County. Seen him speak in Evanston recently. He's very formidable, and I understand that he's pretty popular on the college campuses as well.
And the top two, Pawar and Dan Best, both in their 30s. So does that show something that they're trending, that the poll is kind of favoring the trending of the younger, you know, the younger Democrats?
Well, it is social media that we're working with here, and obviously that trends more towards younger people, but it's important not to take away, I don't believe, necessarily. I mean, anyone that finished at the top would love to do that. Any one of our field would have liked to have done that. But this is a chance to get their name out there and have it shared. And, you know, not a scientific poll, but an opportunity or a snapshot of the social media people that participated.
Anybody interested in supporting the potential candidacies or the interest of these folks or staying in touch with you, Doug, and your group as you go forward in this process, what do they do?
They want to go to the Illinois Democratic County Chairman's Association website, which is ILDCCA.org. And it's important. A lot of people thought we started early with this. But what this really gauged was the angst with our current governor and the enthusiasm to get a new governor. And we're not starting too early. He gave himself a gift of $50 million for Christmas this year for his political fund. And so the Democrats got to start early and get our message out there. And our message is that the President Trump and Governor Rauner are a dangerous combination for our country and that we have a lot of work to do. So please get involved.
Thank you, Doug House. And by the way, just for the sake of clarification from the show standpoint, we don't know that Mr. Rauner and Mr. Trump are spending any quality time together. It's 7:32. We'll do the big story next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Under budget, ahead of schedule.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Where essentially I'm the president.
On Chicago's very own.
I love Chicago. I know Chicago.
720 WGN.
7:44. Senator Durbin coming up. By the way, again, this weekend, Trump's childish handling of the Constitution washed down one of the executive orders that he signed, which was terrific. Because it's not like the first 10 days have been nothing but bad news. He has done a number of things that are positive. One of which is a 5-year lobbying ban. He signed that executive order that said if you work in this administration after we leave office, you know, in April, there will be a 5-year ban on lobbying. The current number is 2 with a lot of loopholes. So a 5-year ban is a big deal. In other words, this is a government job. Don't take advantage of it. This is the closest he's come to draining the swamp and all that talk, which is really all it was until this. But I give him nothing but credit for this. A 5-year lobbying ban is great. All right, coming up on 7:45, let's do traffic here from Mary. And then we will proceed and get Senator Durbin on here in a little bit and see what Washington has planned for today. Gosh, they're terrific.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Again, I have no tolerance for people who say, well, come on, it's just the Constitution. The court system will, in all likelihood, confirm constitutional violations that have taken place because of this executive order on every level. It doesn't matter if it's 130 people who, according to Kellyanne Conway, were inconvenienced, if it's one, or if it's 100 million. The Constitution is the law. It exists for a reason. So what do you do to protect people and still find the bad guys? Because finding the bad guys is absolutely the goal. We'll get Senator Durbin here in just a second. But first, news from the White House. The president's nominee for the Supreme Court will be announced when?
It'll be announced tomorrow live at 7 p.m. our time. Tomorrow, okay. Live, 7 p.m.
All righty then. Senator Durbin joins us. You're in town today?
I am. I'm heading back out to Washington this afternoon.
I don't know if you heard the introduction. I just the idea that a few people were inconvenienced, as I said earlier, inconveniences, you got to take your shoes off and take your laptop out. It's not sitting in handcuffs for 24 hours when you're legally entitled to be here.
And Steve, we know that a lot of people were turned back. Many were denied access to airplanes to come to the United States. Some refugee families had been waiting years to get here. They've gone through several years of background checks. They had sponsors here, synagogues and churches and others who were stepping up, waiting for them to come to the airport, and it was just stopped cold. When you look at it, there are two or three things that just come immediately forward. First, the agencies were not prepared for this. They stopped people who are legal permanent residents of the United States and denied them access. Now, that they've amended the order, but it shows you they weren't thinking clearly. They didn't send down the guidelines to the agencies to make this work, even if you wanted to make it work. Secondly, you have a situation here. You said it. We want America to be safe. How many Syrian refugees have been accused of terrorism in the United States? The answer, none.
Zero.
Not one. And across the whole refugee population that we've brought in since World War II, it's just minuscule. A handful of people in the entire 30-year, 40-year history that has been reviewed. And finally, let me tell you, crossing the line here when it comes to the issue of religion is something everyone in America, whether you're a religious believer or not, ought to take extremely seriously. This is a bedrock of who we are as Americans. And to say Muslims need not apply when it comes to refugee status here, which effectively is what this does, is absolutely unacceptable.
Well, and Rudy Giuliani, there's no bigger Donald Trump supporter than Rudy Giuliani, said over the weekend on the Sunday talk shows on more than one appearance that he was asked to come up with a Muslim ban that could get through, and how do we make it legal? Well, the words Muslim and ban were in the sentence that came out of Rudy Giuliani's mouth. So we know this is non-constitutional. We know it's a violation of the highest order. There's very little that could be done legislatively, right? Because Trump's not going to sign a bill that says I was wrong.
And you can count on one hand the number of Republicans who've stepped up and said there's something wrong with this. I salute my two Republican colleagues, Jeff Flake and Ben Sasse, who have said that. It took guts for them to say that.
Well, but you know what? McCain and Lindsey Graham stepped up as well, maybe not as vociferously, but they're also on board.
Point well taken. And they have been critical of the Trump operation in many other aspects as well. But here's what it gets down to, and it goes to your lead in here. We're counting on the courts. We're counting on the courts to interpret the Constitution and to save this country from being redefined in the eyes of the world today. And now we're talking about the tipping point in the U.S. Supreme Court, filling this vacancy. you know, they've called me a couple times in the White House and said, what do you think? And I said, do you know how raw feelings are in the Senate about what you have done, that Republicans have done in the last year when they wouldn't let President Obama fill this vacancy? For the first time ever in the history of the United States, first time, to deny a president the opportunity to fill a vacancy. And so when you're going to send somebody to us, go out of your way to make sure this is a person who is not going to be a spark plug in controversy, someone who really can make good claim to being moderate.
Senator, I wanted to ask you, going back to the immigration ban, should we worry about the backlash now? Not so much from countries like Iraq, who, if their parliament this morning passed a similar resolution saying that Americans are not allowed to travel there, but from other countries, our allies, Britain and Germany, with both Theresa May and Angela Merkel saying that they are not in support of this.
Well, I can tell you that General Michael Hayden and David Petraeus, both known as very conservative Republicans and so forth, warned us ahead of time. When you do things like this, it just feeds the narrative of those who are recruiting terrorists around the world. And our allies, many of whom are Muslim nations, feel discouraged because, you know, their support of the United States may not be that popular at home. And here we have action taken against seven Muslim countries, dominant Muslim countries. That's not going to be lost on our enemies or our allies.
Give me a little bit of a history lesson on the Security Council. The Security Council, as I understand it, put in place by Bush 1 as a way to sort of more cohesively put together thoughts on what we should do as a defense position going forward. Those ideas then be brought back to the president. Is that still the purpose of it?
Of course it is. And this notion that Steve Bannon, who everybody knows, did serve in the military, give him credit for that, but beyond that has become the author of this Breitbart website, which takes some of the most extreme and divisive views possible, has now been dealt into a seat at the table at the highest levels of discussion about America's defense policy. You know, as much as President Obama respected David Axelrod, David never asked, and the president would never consider putting him at that high level of decision-making when it came to national security. It's worrisome. It tells you that the next step on national security, whatever it may be, is going to be one that's made with the voice of the Breitbart News at the table.
Yeah, because we know this, that Trump is very easily swayed and Steve, by the people in his inner circle, and that Steve Bannon is somebody that has his ear. He served in the Navy. That doesn't qualify him to supersede the opinion of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or who else is missing from that table. I know that a couple were asked to stand down.
Well, the point you're getting to is one that we're thinking about all the time. Why did Dick Durbin, Democrat, vote for General Mattis to be head of Department of Defense under President Trump? Why did I vote for General Kelly to do the same under Homeland Security? Well, I respected them both in their service to our country, but I also knew they were strong, principled people. And if this president needed to hear the harsh truth, they wouldn't hesitate to give it. And if he asked them to do something that deviated from the norms in terms of standard conduct and values of America, they'd step up and leave. And I asked them point blank. And that's what worries me. When you surround this president with people who say yes or infect him with extreme views, he's likely to fall down. And I shouldn't say fall down, but he's likely to fall prey, I should say, to the ideas that are otherwise extreme.
What's going on at O'Hare today is that you're aware of. I know the mayor was out there last night. He'll join us in a few minutes.
A salute to all the volunteer lawyers, some online, some in person, standing at the airport to help worrisome travelers and their families. They're trying, but at this point, they've told me it's difficult. They don't have any official link with Customs and Border Protection Agency. And we have to find a way to make sure that when people need legal counsel and questions answered, they have access. That's what's going on. I'm headed out to Washington to see what we can do at that level.
And is the best thing for people listening who are fired up about this to pick up their phone and hit the email and say, look, I put you in Congress. I won't support you again if you support this policy?
That's what democracy is all about. If you believe very strongly in an issue, you know, you can express your feelings in a peaceful, nonviolent way, exercising free speech, but be sure to let that member of Congress of either political party know where you stand.
All right. I know you're running late, and we are as well, so we'll let you go on that. Thank you, Senator.
Thanks, Steve.
That's Senator Dick Durbin, who is headed back to Washington. Again, the Supreme Court nomination will be announced when?
It's going to be announced live by President Trump tomorrow at 7 p.m. our time, 8 o'clock Eastern.
Could he pick the show that has all three judges? Could he pick all three of them, just let them rotate? What's it called? A hot bench?
To tell the truth.
Hot bench. Hot bench. Oh, can you pick the hot bench judges?
Yeah.
7:58, Mayor Emanuel coming up. By the way, any number of Republican invitees this morning who have, were invited to come on for whatever reason weren't available, including members of the Trump administration. And Mike Madigan's been invited again. This is show number 829. That's 829 shows where he has turned us down. It's a minute before 8 on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
No hate, no fear. Refugees are welcome.
Representatives of these communities are here now demanding that those held in detention here at O'Hare and at JFK and anywhere else around the country be immediately released.
Yeah! America is not hate.
They are not the terrorists. They are the victims of terrorism.
America is love.
I'm horrified by what our government is doing inside.
It's a very dangerous, dangerous time.
It's I-12. Dean's coming up here in a little bit. Going to talk to Mayor Emanuel here in a second as well about trying to get some of the best talent attracted back to Chicago. But the topic of the day is an obvious one. Good morning, Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm all right. Were you at the O'Hare last night?
Yes. As I was flying down to Champaign, I stopped by to thank all the lawyers who are volunteering their time. And we sent them some coffee and stuff to keep them energized and just wanted them to know that I thought they were standing up, not in volunteering, but more importantly, standing up for our collective values of who we are.
And
their energy.
Do we know that everybody that was being held is now no longer being held?
We don't know. I don't have that update yet. I'll be getting stuff from the airport a little later. I think there's, you could expect this, there's, unfortunately, given the way this was rolled out, a lot of confusion at the ground level of what's now permissible, what's not permissible. I don't think this is exactly, I mean, I know the question's a fair question, what does that mean to the people that were stopped last night? But the basic tenet here, you know, some people talk about the country divided and that nothing's united people more than this action.
Right.
That, you know, I say this, Steve, you know I'm a fan of history. In 38, Hitler put a bunch of Jewish kids on a boat. It's called the St. Louis. And sent it. And it went from shore to shore, and his intent was to show that nobody wanted these kids. And then they ended up, outside of the United States, Miami, and they were allowed in by Roosevelt and the State Department and sent back. That was a shame and a stain on America. We should not repeat this. These are kids and families. They have been cleared, vetted, and it is contrary to everything we believe in. Everything. And I say that also as a son and a grandson of immigrants.
Right.
And we have history when America went counter to its own image of itself and its own values, and that did not turn out well, and it's wrong. People immediately reacted with the right type of fear that this was wrong.
You served as chief of staff to President Obama. Take us behind closed doors here on how something like this comes up. There should be a system of people to look the president in the eye, shouldn't there, and say, I understand you're passionate about this, but we cannot do this and we cannot do this this way. How does that not happen?
Well, I mean, you asked the core question. Put aside for a second the very substance is wrong. The process turned that substance and made it worse because people that are supposed to carry this out, like the head of Homeland Security, had no knowledge. They close hold. These type of things, the national security staff run it through the system. When I say that, state weighs in, defense weighs in, all these entities, White House staff included, legal, justice, you know, to make sure that whatever you're doing is on firm legal ground and what are the, you know, nothing's a clear shot. So there, you have to weigh all the equities against each other. None of that happened. The people actually responsible for executing this had no knowledge about it. So the very process of, you know, a memo would be sent out describing it, here are the content, and then every entity that it touches, from the Attorney General's office to the Defense Department to intelligence to defense, state, obviously congressional, they would weigh in with comments of yay or nay or something, and none of that happened. They close hold, and you know, it's contrary also to what, if I'm not mistaken, I'm doing this, but is that General Mattis himself has said in the past as it relates to barring people from Iraq and Afghanistan who were supportive of our troops in their efforts.
Mayor, even before this executive order, you made it clear Chicago will stay a sanctuary city. Are you fearful of any federal retribution?
You know, first, I want to say I announced this last night. Amy and I are going to hold a dinner for Dreamers, our kids at Chicago Public Schools. And I've met them my whole tenure as mayor. These are kids at our military high schools. I met a young woman over the weekend who's now waiting to, you know, she's at a high school. She's waiting to hear from Notre Dame and University of Chicago. These are kids doing right. They're fearful right now. They're uncertain. Their families are uncertain. And I want the city of Chicago to open their arms, open their homes, communicate to them, and reassure them that they're safe, secure, and supported. That's one. We are a welcoming city. Always have been. It's actually an interesting little piece of history again. In 1850, Chicago was the only city council that passed an ordinance that would not cooperate with the federal government on the Fugitive Slave Act. So we've always been a sanctuary city, going back to 1850. And what does that mean? It welcomes people to our shore that they are secure, they can go about their lives of pursuing the American dream. Nobody wants to leave their home country of Poland or Pakistan or India or Ireland or Mexico or, in my grandfather's case, Moldova. There's something there, the humanitarian crisis, the inability for you to provide for your family. And Chicago offers promise, hope, and a better tomorrow.
The whole reason, this isn't poetry. The whole reason we are the leader of the free world and the place everybody wants to be is because we've always welcomed people to bring their best here, best to be their best, and invite them to build families and lives here. That's the whole basis of this country.
So let me connect this. I'm at U of I today talking to the computer science engineering and LP Tory. We're asking them when they're done to come up to Chicago. About 50% of those kids are from around the world. About 40% of the patents in Illinois are from foreigners who've called Chicago or Illinois home. This is self-defeating. It's nuts.
Yeah, well,
at every level, it is contrary to our self-interest. And, you go to University of Chicago, you go to U of I, you go to UIC, you go to Northwestern, you go to Columbia, and all your institutions of higher learning. You go, I was at Accenture doing a town hall with the employees. There are people from all over the world. That's a great thing.
Yeah, it is a great thing. And it's beneficial to all of us. By the way, you can go to Think Chicago.
Where's your family from?
My family is, they're all Northern European mutts.
Okay, but they came here. They journeyed here at a time.
Right.
My grandfather came 100 years ago, 13 years old, by himself, to flee the pogroms that were prosecuting Jews in Eastern Europe. This city opened their arms and their heart to him. And the promise of that was that within two generations, his grandson's the mayor. In the same way that my dad left Israel and decided to make a chance here with my mother in Chicago. That's the power of the idea and ideals of America. And I'm hoping to convince the kids down here and all our universities and our kids in our Chicago public schools and our community colleges that Chicago welcomes them. In the same way, I don't know if you, I think I've told you this, if you get a B average in high school, we make community college free.
Right.
That's open to Dreamers. Only city in the United States can do that.
Are you making something with kale when the Dreamers dinner happens?
You know, Steve, this is a serious issue, and you just can't, for 20 minutes, you can't go. No, we're not. We may have a kale salad, and I may actually end up in the kitchen. With my famous pasta dish.
Stay out of the kitchen. Let Amy do that. She's better than you. ThinkChicago.net for this particular issue. One thing before we let you go.
Mayor, just one thing. Many Chicago residents, whether you're born or not here, many of us who are Chicago's very own, continue to hear Donald Trump hammer away at Chicago, at the violence, at the crime, at the numbers. What are your thoughts on that? And has he made any attempt to contact you to come here and see these neighborhoods and see the problem firsthand?
Well, first of all, I want to step back and just... Look, we have 77 neighborhoods. 37 of them last year saw a decline. The concentration here, and which is why we have to focus on the areas, are in kind of the 7th district where Eddie and I were on Friday, and the 11th district on the west side, Englewood and Harrison. About 4% of the population, this is just data, unfortunately, and they represent 25% of all the gun violence. So the strategy is very clear. We need more police with better better technology, better training on how to break up the gang violence and give them the certainty and the encouragement to be both professional and proactive, not reactive. Second, with all that training and technology, we need to target the kids, which is what we're doing in the high schools and in the elementary schools, and provide them a mentor and a role model. You know, my view of this is you can't be what you can't see. And too many of these kids are growing up without a role model in their lives to help them.
True story.
Make right decisions, very bad decisions. Then third, let's get, you know, sometimes gets Eddie and I in trouble, but I believe in the certainty around gun crimes and in the certainty around the law. We don't have that. New York has a 3-year minimum for any gun violence. Chicago, Illinois, 1 year, nobody serves it. You know, everybody says you can't lock people up and put them behind jail. Well, we've tried that. That's what we're doing right now as it relates to repeat gun offenders. Even the Tribune yesterday ran a story about what's going on with bail and how these guys are back out on the streets barely serving a period of their time. And then finally, we've got to make the investments in both skills and neighborhood economic investments, like what we're doing in Pullman, like what we're doing in North Lawndale with the movie studio, like what we're doing in Bronzeville with the grocery store and the park investments, like what we're doing in Woodlawn with the public transportation, the housing. And so you give people an opportunity to both have the skills to be part of the economy and a neighborhood where there's decades of neglect, we start to turn those around. But police are a key component of breaking, you know, getting between gangs who want to take things into their own hands. And
sure.
We need to support our officers. They have to earn the support, but they have to be supported because they are doing a very tough job. And they have to have be supported, meaning give them the training, technology, so they have the certainty to go out and do their job and the leadership to do it.
And Trump, I was just going to say, I know you met with Trump at the White House. Has he contacted you about this since the tweet?
Yeah, you know, I have not met with him in the White House. I met with him in New York.
Okay.
I have talked, not to him, but, I would always welcome more FBI, ATF, federal entities that work with our local law enforcement. I would welcome more prosecutions of gun violence at the federal level. I'd welcome greater investment. We can afford 8th, 9th, and 10th grade for these young men. I'd love support for 6th and 7th grade so we can give these kids 5 steady years of mentoring and then help us with job training and economic development. I'll give you an example. When I became mayor, our summer jobs was $14,500. It's now $31,000. And every year the federal government's been, since 2012, reducing their support. Step up. Give these kids a job in the summer. Let them get their resume right.
Right, right.
That's a piece of it. But it's not the answer, but it's a piece of it.
It's absolutely a piece of it. It's more than a tough guy tweet. All right, thinkchicago.net. That's a great resource. Businesses around Chicago, it's not too late to get involved and make Chicago a destination for great minds around the state and around the Midwest, around the country.
Two things. I want everybody to reach out. We've got 10 organizations. Invite dreamers, their families, or the kids into your home. They're living on razor edge right now, not sure. They need the certainty to know that this city supports them. Okay?
All right. What was the other thing?
The other thing is, well, we'll do it another time. We'll go through it. It deals with the crime and violence that's happening
in
other cities. But we'll talk about that. My focus is getting Chicago right and giving our officers and our communities the support they need to turn this around.
You take care of being the hospitality guy when the Dreamers are there. Let Amy take care of making sure the meal is perfect because she's a great cook.
I'll do the dishes, but if there's anything left over, Kale, you're the food depository.
Wow, I've never been called a depository before.
Not to your face, at least.
you're just the great one, not the greater food depository.
Depository. Yeah, you're right, not to my face. That's Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Dean next on 720 WGN.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9 and 720. Oh,
oh, oh, oh. Dean joins us from Channel 9. The mayor took most of your time.
That was a great interview.
Well, thanks.
I love when the mayor's on with you. He
called me a depository.
Now, see, I was listening. I thought I heard him say suppository.
Both are complimentary. Screen Actors Guild Awards last night. Julia Louis-Dreyfus funny right out of the gate.
She was funny. Like almost everybody political last night, as you might expect. Usually there's one or two people who might say something political. There were only one or two people who didn't say something political last night. Here's just a little sampling of some of the political talk last night.
I'm supposed to have faith, but I didn't have faith. This, God bless you all, all the other actors. I said, well, you know that young boy's going to win, Denzel. You ain't going to win, so I didn't even prepare.
This story is of unity. This story is about what happens when we put our differences aside and we come together as a human race. We win. Love wins every time.
We're in a really tricky time in the world, in our country, and things are very inexcusable and scary and need action. And I'm so grateful to be part of a group of people that cares and that wants to reflect things back to society.
There's Denzel Washington, who won Best Actor. First time he's ever won a SAG Award. He's been denied six times before.
What's he done?
He really hasn't done much in his career.
Right.
Taraji P. Henson accepting for Hidden Figures. That was the big award of the night.
Quite a dress on that girl.
Hidden Figures, yes, indeedy. Mm-hmm. Emma Stone won Best Actress. But people like Ashton Kutcher and Bryan Cranston and others getting super political last night. Take a listen to this.
Do we have cut to? Okay, never mind.
We don't have that. Okay,
never mind. We got a little technical problem.
Right.
But I know what you're talking about because, and by the way, I was thrilled that Bryan Cranston won because I love that production of LBJ's life and LBJ in the White House.
Yeah, all the way.
And the civil rights. Yeah, all the way.
He talked about how people ask him all the time, you know, what would LBJ think of Donald Trump? And, you know, he said that LBJ would put his arm around him and tell him, you know to get through this and stick with your convictions. But he also said something that LBJ apparently said all the time. Don't blank in the soup that we all have to eat.
And if you have read anything about LBJ, you know that it's likely true.
Yeah. So that was
ACLU raised a bunch of money this weekend.
Well, the total figures after Saturday night's protests were through the roof. But what was interesting last night is that a bunch of celebrities are stepping forward saying that they will match up to $100,000 anybody who donates to the ACLU. The singer Sia started it all and said that she'd match up to $100,000 if people donate. Rosie O'Donnell, Donald Trump's arch rival, said that she'll do the same thing. Filmmaker Judd Apatow saying he'll do the same thing. And there are about half a dozen other celebrities on
it. Yeah, I got a number here. Does this sound right? $24 million raised this weekend?
Yeah. I remember when I saw the total number last night, it was astonishing how many people had donated. But some of these celebrities putting their money where their mouth is.
Next big award show is what?
Grammy Awards, which will be on the 12th in 2 weeks. Then we have the Oscars on the 24th.
I believe I'm up for a Grammy this year.
Spoken word?
Yep. 6 to 10.
Best suppository and a long form album.
Remember our slogan here, much less music, much more talk. All right, I'll talk to you later.
See you tomorrow.
That's Dean. Back after this with the big story on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
842, one of the enduring stories and one of the matches that lit the civil rights movement in this country to make the progress that has been made was the Emmett Till story. Over the weekend, you may have seen that the woman who was at the epicenter of the Emmett Till story that led to his beating and his death admitted she made up the entire thing. How you live with yourself every day is beyond me, and trying to make good with God in the last days of your life, I suppose, is the right thing to do, but it doesn't change the pain. So Emmett Till was a sacrifice, and Trayvon Martin's family, his parents specifically, are trying to make sure that his story endures as well. Next month will be 5 years since he was shot and killed at the age of 17, walking home with candy and a soda, if I remember right. The Enduring Life of Trayvon Martin, the Rest in Power book, is out, available everywhere. Rest in Power, a parent story of love and justice and the birth of a movement. Sabrina Fulton and Tracy Martin join me now. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning,
Steve. Good morning.
And sorry for your loss. I haven't had a chance to say that to you before.
Thank you.
Thank you.
5 years is a long time. I'm sure it doesn't seem like 5 years to you because you probably wake up every day and think about them.
Yes, even though the calendar says it's been 5 years, it really doesn't feel like 5 years. The hole in my heart is still fresh, and it, you know, constantly I'm reminded that Trayvon is not here. And so that's why this book is so important to us. That's why the foundation is so important to us and the work that we do, because we certainly want Trayvon to look down on us and smile.
The foundation, the greater hope here, sir, the foundation is to do what?
The foundation is to bring is here to bring awareness, to help families heal with from their loss. The foundation is also here to be the voice for the voiceless. We think that there are so many cases that don't get attention. We were just fortunate to get attention in our situation, but there are many other incidents that are going across the country that don't get any recognition, which should get recognition. And so we're here for that. We're here to help families heal. We're here to help progress.
Sabrina and Tracy, you both have risen to the forefront of peaceful activism. Have you seen a change in the past 5 years, both in the division of the country and how we react to this, the public and the politicians too?
I've seen a little bit of change, but we still have a long way to go. You always have different opinions, different views, and some people are for change and some people are against change. But we understand that in order to make an impact, in order to make change, we have to be a part of the change.
Sabrina, I would echo what Andrea just said. I salute both of you as these 5 years have gone on, and we've had some really incendiary situations in this country that could have sparked up even further, but you've both spoken out to keep the peace, and the great win is to keep the peace, not to create more hurt.
Right, and we don't want more lives to be lost because people are protesting or because it just went a little too far. We really don't want people to tear up their own community because it takes so long for the communities to come back. We've had that problem in Miami before with people protesting and burning and, you know, rioting and looting, and it just takes so long to bring that, to revitalize that neighborhood. And so we try to discourage people from really tearing up their communities and go a different avenue to try to protest what's happening.
The book's called Rest in Power, A Parent Story of Love and Justice and the Birth of a Movement. Sabrina Fulton and Tracy Martin are with us, Andrea.
And do either of you have political aspirations? I know you've talked about possibly one or both of you running for office.
We both are looking at it. We both are reviewing, and we feel like if we want to make change, we have to be a part of that change. And so it's something that we are just simply exploring. I mean, they already put us in the White House already, and we want to start with our local government so that we can learn about what the position entails and so we can move our way up, not only to make change in our community or in the state of Florida, but in this country.
As you read the book, you lay out in really difficult detail what your thoughts were and how the trial went down and what you thought even before the verdict was read, that it wasn't going to go the way that justice would have seen it go. How tough was it to go back and revisit all of that and just tell the story over again as the thing was written, Tracy?
It was real tough because, you know, we lived through that trial for several months. We've been living through the trial for several years now. But just to reiterate, or just to keep going back over that same story on how some of the, even I go back to the potential jurors and the perception that they had of Trayvon and the perception that they had of me. It was one young lady that said that if I had been present in Trayvon's life, he probably wouldn't have been in the situation that he was in. And that's just how the public view view people. Here's a lady that really didn't know me, really didn't know Trayvon, but she had already had a preconceived notion of who I was and what I did in his life.
And divorce goes on every day, and co-parenting goes on every day. It has nothing to do with being shot while you're walking home from a convenience store.
Exactly.
In the book itself, as I said, you lay out leading up to the verdict and beyond. How long did it take you after the verdict to get to this point where you guys decided collectively or separately you want a legacy for Trayvon that's powerful and positive as opposed to just leaving it at the verdict that day?
Well, I think what we did was we both agreed as soon as the verdict came down that we wouldn't let this verdict say who Trayvon was. We wouldn't let this verdict bring us down as a family. We wouldn't let this verdict stop us from going out and helping other families. And so with that understanding, we knew right then and there that we had to continue to fight. We had to continue to do something that would impact this country with the injustices that goes on.
And Sabrina, I'll let you go on this, but you know, I believe in the Second Amendment, but I believe in legal gun owners doing the right thing and not misuse. Did you ever consider leaving Florida as a gun-friendly state as it is with the laws set up to protect the shooters?
No, I've never been one to run away from a challenge, and I felt like this was a challenge, and you're challenging my 17-year-old to walk down the street and to get home safely. And so I might not be able to save Trayvon, but certainly I'm going to do my best to try to save other young teenagers that this may happen to.
I salute you both. I know you got to run and talk to other folks. I wish you luck with the book, Rest in Power, available everywhere. Get two copies. You're careless, you'll lose the first one. And keep the faith and stay positive.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sabrina Fulton and Tracy Martin, the parents of Trayvon Martin. 5 years. Does it feel like 5 years?
It does not feel like 5 years.
5 years. And by the way, for everybody that thought George Zimmerman was such a swell guy, how much of the wheels come off of that guy in the last 5 years? You don't know what you know until you know. But in that case, what we now know is the fact that the kid was walking home. He shouldn't have been profiled. He shouldn't have been in a scuffle. Right. And he shouldn't have been shot. We only got a couple of minutes to do this. Justice is probably not enough time. But there was a study that came out last week. And what do we know about girls? We know that when girls get to middle school, the mean girls thing is real.
It is real.
And we know that it's mean and it's cruel. And we know that as parents, you have to talk to your girls and find out if they are, in fact, are the bullies. Don't assume they're the good girls. Don't assume everything's... I don't care how good a parent you are. Don't assume your kids aren't getting mixed up with being mean to other girls. And the reason I bring all of this up is this study last week, which is really a heartbreaking, you know, study. And whether or not it is scientifically proven again and again, here's what we know. A group of six-year-old girls, so these are first graders, a group of six-year-old girls were shown a series of images and asked to pick who looked like the successful, intelligent one in the pictures. And by the time they were six, not at five, not at four, not at three, I think it started at four, actually, and maybe not later in life after 10 or 11, but those important years between 6 and 10, the girls invariably picked the image of the boy.
Yeah.
The boy was smarter. The boy was more intelligent. The boy had it going on. So the obvious back this up question is why? Why do girls feel that way? You know, you blame it on pop culture. Is it parenting? Is it something genetic? Are girls hardwired to take a backseat to boys? Well, I think it's less than it's ever been, but I think it's a question that's worthy of exploring more and getting answers to. I know that you can, you know, have a daughter or daughters and tell them every day how great they are and tell them every day they're going to change the world and all of that. They're still going to go through certain things that girls go through because of the way God wired your team.
Mm-hmm. No, I think
it does seem like we could be better than we are. I just don't know the answer. I just know the study bothered me. I don't know the answer to it.
It absolutely, I think, is a societal thing because, you know, I think young girls need to be, they need to have instilled in them from birth. You know, from the time that, because they pick up, I mean, of course they're learning all their cognitive skills at 2 and 3 and maybe even before that, but they need to be told, you can be president, you can be an astronaut.
But don't you think that's happening?
I would hope so.
Well, it happens in all the Disney movies.
But apparently not. I think it needs to be better.
I have never in my life, and Dave, I'm sure the same with your daughter. Dave's listening to a different show. I have never said to Amy Cochran.
No.
That girls can't do that.
No, my father always said you can be anything you want to be. But I think most dads do tell their daughters that. It just needs to be more ingrained so that they start thinking from a young age, you know what, we can do this. We can be president. We can be anything we want.
It's just something to think about. We'll put the study up on Facebook, and you can take a look at it there.
Do you think it's harder because of social media now? I mean, do you think that's a big
absolutely.
Problem as well? Me too.
Absolutely, yeah. Without question.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Guitar. I play this part. So we were talking about the Women's March a couple of weeks ago, and here's what happens sometimes. You get great movements, right? Great moments in history, and then everybody goes, we're so pumped, and then everybody gets back to their life. This needs to keep going, and one of the ways to keep going is as a regular thing here. We want to highlight not just women in business, but men in business as well, who are trying to affect positive change, right? Change in Chicago.
Women are great at putting dates on the calendar. You know, we'll say, hey, we're going to do lunch, we're going to do whatever, book it. So I know there's another Women's March that's planned for April 15th for Tax Day as well.
There is?
Yes, there is.
All right, I'll march in that one.
Okay, good, good. So, we'll get you a little pink hat.
It'd be a hot look for me. Of course, in my case, it wouldn't be a little pink hat. C Strategies is one of the companies we're talking about. C Strategies is a strategic communications and public affairs firm. Just helping companies getting it done through a myriad of ways, bringing passion and veteran experience to help clients meet their business goals. You know one of our guests well.
I do, Micah Stambaugh, who used to work for the city. You're kind of like the everywhere woman, you know, kind of getting things done, making your mark, and helping other women get it done, too.
Yeah, we are. We thank you for having us, first of all.
Your position at the company?
I'm the vice president.
Okay.
So Becky, who is the CEO and president of the company,
she's going to join us on the phone here in just a second.
Is kind of the political side of things, and I came on as the media, marketing, branding, communication side of things.
The lifestyle.
Yeah. So we wanted to kind of pair up and bring the fun into consulting.
Sure. And here's the thing. We don't want to confuse people here and say this is a company that only works with women.
No.
You work with everybody.
Yeah.
But trying to bring the fun back into their business and trying to inject maybe some life into it where some life isn't there anymore, huh?
For sure. We are, obviously, we have both men and male and female clients, but we want to be able to, there are so many amazing stories of women in Chicago that are buried in the neighborhoods, and we wanted to kind of dig through those and promote them and put them out there and started making a difference.
And a lot of you may remember Micah from Channel 2 and from City Hall in case you were trying to get a ticket fixed. You passed
no.
her in the
hallways.
No, not you, Mike. It's somebody else. Yeah, it wasn't you. Let me get Becky in here. Becky Carroll's got, is it your husband that's feeling under the weather? So you had to save the day, Becky?
Well, isn't that what we do every day? another day at home and then get right back to work.
Just taking care of the kids, your kid and your kid.
Yes. All good morning.
Nice to have you on the show. And talk about C Strategies. When did you form the company?
Gosh, I formed it back in like the middle of 2015, and I had spent about 20 years working in public affairs and campaigns and government, and I loved all the work that I did, but I think like a lot of people, they get to a point like, you know, I think I'm ready to just branch out on my own and no longer have to have 10 people telling you what to do. You just get to do it yourself. And the great thing, though, is that the work we do is we still get to work in kind of the space and help those who are trying to do really good things in Chicago get their story out, because there's so many amazing organizations and businesses that are right here trying to make a difference. So we try to take on some of these businesses that have the greatest story that you've never heard, and then we try to get them out there.
How do you find them?
It's a lot of word of mouth. I think like if you're hopefully not going to look good at what you do, you know, people spread the word. I think every client we've gotten so far has been through friends of friends, clients that we've had who've told, you know, their counterparts and colleagues about us. And we've grown to about 15 clients or so, and we'll be adding on more this year.
That's
and
pretty good, less than a year.
About a year and a half. And but what we also try to do is really have a voice in the community, too, which is why we started things that are kind of outside the consulting day-to-day by doing our monthly podcast called The Broadcast, which is focused on women. And then
Broadcast! Look what you did there!
I know! Isn't that like the best name ever?
Yeah, it's kind of a good name.
And every guest that comes on The Broadcast gets a chapstick that says The Broadcast on it to keep their...
Nice marketing.
Look at that.
Yeah.
It's moisturized and so they can talk.
Tell us about The Broadcast a little bit more. Who are some of the guests and what are some of the topics we can expect to hear?
Well, we just had our first inaugural one in January, and it was amazing. And the topic was women in the news media, those reporting it and those as subjects. And we had some rock stars like Heidi Stevens of the Tribune and Natasha Correcki of Politico.
Oh, we love Natasha.
Smith Tapp.
Yeah. Happy birthday! Happy birthday to Natasha, actually, today.
Oh, nice. Oh, is it today?
Yeah.
All right, so let me ask you a generalization type question here. Is it easier to work with women, or is it easier to work with a group of women and men?
I always think women are really super collaborative, but, you know, I think in this business, you just got to learn how to work with everyone. Everyone brings different personalities and skill sets and experiences, and, you know, you just roll with it. That's always kind of been my motto. It's like, you never know who you're going to work with or for, so don't burn bridges and just make it work.
So it's not about working with women or men. It's about working with the right people.
Yeah.
With certainty.
Yeah, no without kidding. A doubt.
We should ask them, too. Steve and I were kicking this around right before you guys started. There was a survey that was done, an unfortunate survey, if you will, last week, about they showed six-year-old girls' pictures, and the six-year-old girls would identify the most brilliant people in the photos as the boys in the photos. Why is that, and at what age should you really start telling your daughters you can be president? You can be a CEO of a company.
But again, to bring it back to where we were... Yeah. I think my generation of parents, and my kids are grown now, but my generation of parents did nothing but that.
Right.
You know, you can do anything you want. You can be anything you want. The world's better because you're in it. You're changing. What are we missing? Yeah. What are we missing with girls? Hey, here's a good tease. And we'll be back to discuss that. How do we make it easier for little girls to grow up and be big girls who are changing the world? That's all. Fix that for us. 9:17, we'll come back, and Becky and Michael will have all the answers to the world's issues in just a moment. If Becky, C Strategies, if people want to get a hold of you guys, what do they do?
You can go to our website at www.cstrategiesllc.com.
All right, back after this on 720 WGN. Nine 21, company's called CE Strategies Consulting, and just making you better. Top to bottom. In studio is Micah Stambaugh and Becky Carroll's on the phone. And let me start with you, Becky. We were talking about this study where little six-year-old girls were asked to pick out the successful person in the picture, and they kept picking the boys. Beyond you can do anything you want in this world, and you can change the world, and all the things that moms and dads are supposedly saying to their kids, who in your life or what happened for you that gave you the self-esteem to go out and do what you've done in your career?
Wow. I really think it was a series of experiences in my life. And I was surrounded by people who were a good support system. And you can look at any study out there, and it doesn't matter what background you come from. If you have at least one adult in your life that's helping to steer you and support you, you can be successful. And you know, when I have a 3-year-old daughter, so hearing that story, I kind of think like, geez, how exactly am I going to deal with that? You know, I don't know. Maybe the little girls think the boys look really cute, and they're picking them out in the photo. Because at that age, wow, that's really deep and psychological. I just hope that, you know, my own daughter can see that she has a strong mom and that her parents have a strong relationship, and then her dad respects her mom. And you just have to have positivity as much as possible in your life when you're raising your kids, no matter how tough you might have it. But they need to see that, and they need to see not just positive women, but I think men treating women in their lives in a positive way as well.
No question about it. And Micah, same question for you. Was there somebody in particular that you know, gave you self-esteem and confidence maybe at a different level than some friends?
I mean, my mom was a force. She was extremely supportive, but I wasn't the kid that typically played video games. And I mean, I wanted to do all the things that the boys did. I ran in the boys' circles. I played Ghost in the Graveyard till 9 o'clock at night. I watched the news. I wasn't a cartoon Game Boy player. I was a little bit different. And my mom always said, that's okay. Whatever you want to do. I mean, I played softball. I didn't want to play dance. I've kind of always just, marched to the beat of my own drum.
But you would always get around, get up and mix it up with people.
Always. I mean, you could drop me in any group or setting and I would get along with them. You know, I played sports when I was 12 at 16 and 18 and under levels and meshed really well. So I feel like my mom always told me, whatever is comfortable for you, just do it.
Sure.
And for me, that's a big
thing. And try it, right? Just try it.
And for me, that's the biggest thing. So I'm on the board of the YWCA Chicago here. And we empower little girls starting. And the biggest thing that I see is that they think that they're supposed to be ballerinas, or they think that they're supposed to be this, pretty cute girl. And we put them in tech programs. We put them in, math and science academies, whatever they have an interest in, we put them there for a few hours or a day and expose them to that. And they are just so happy.
You light them up, right? Yep. You expose them to something that could spur them on to choose other things or maybe chase that path. Even.
And I think that's the key. You have to just open up the door for them and let them try it and then let them make the decision. Don't push your kid to play soccer because you played soccer. Don't push your kid to, be a CPA because that's what you know. I think you have to really just foster the growth and whatever it is that they want to do and support them and reward them and teach them that, a part of winning is losing and a part of winning is feeling awkward and a part of winning is doing what makes you happy. You might not make $5 million a year, but you're going to go home every day with a smile.
Well, self-esteem can come out of all of that because you can get self-esteem from understanding how to lose.
Yeah, it's a great point, though. It's okay that you lost because next time you'll be better and you'll win. It's kind of like a goal.
Mm-hmm. Becky, with all your political experience, one of the things that's really relevant today is this Stand with Aleppo campaign. The White Helmets documentary, which I've mentioned and recommended a million times, is up for an Academy Award. The subjects in the documentary and the shooter and the producers can't now come to the country with this executive order in place from this weekend. Without getting into the outrageousness of the politics from all of that, the Stand with Aleppo campaign continues. What is it and what do people need to do to help?
Sure. Well, a good friend of mine, Wendy Whittem, and I, several months ago, kind of created this group that was born of frustration after a good friend of ours, who was the last neurosurgeon in Aleppo. His hospital had been bombed a couple of times, and we'd lost touch with him, and we couldn't find anything on the news. We couldn't find any statements by world leaders. We were just so angry that no one seemed to care, that we were like, well, we have to do something, and we came up with this campaign, and it started on Sunday, October 2nd, and we started with a Facebook group and invited like-minded friends and started a hashtag and a banner. And, that week we were trending on Twitter and Facebook, and we pushed a similar campaign to get Aleppo asked in the second presidential debate, and that trended, and they asked about it. And it's taken on kind of a life of its own where people in countries all across the world have been operating under this banner. And it's really about trying to raise awareness and move people to action to stand up for these very innocent families and children who have been caught up in this horrible geopolitical situation, not of their making. And today it continues to evolve. We're focusing on freeing all of Syria, making sure that this genocide continues to stop. And there are lots of ways that people can help. Refugee groups need help that are on the ground in Jordan and Turkey. There are refugee organizations here in and around Chicago. You can join our kind of cause online to help get your voice out, because when you post to social media on Facebook and Twitter, you're reaching everyone in your networks. And this is how it grew organically. So I would suggest folks, look into organizations like the Syrian Community Network in Chicago, Refugee One in Chicago. And if anyone's interested, tonight there will be an event hosted by some state reps talking about the Syrian refugee crisis from 6 to 7. They can go to State Representative Ann Williams' website and get all the information. But, you know, it's, I think over the last few days, it just really kind of hit the restart button and elevated it in such a new way again that, you know, we have now this second wave of activism happening. And I think that, you know, the unintended consequences of President Trump's actions has now just reignited a whole new series of people who are going to be engaged in this issue for the better.
Yeah, my daughter and her small group from church adopted a Syrian family, and that's another thing you can do either through your church or your community organizations. Imagine being driven out of your country and ending up here and not knowing anyone. You know, just to have people,
right.
Don't let the language be a barrier either, because there's ways to break that down as well. All right,
or,
so.
Or the religion.
Yeah, exactly. See strategies. I salute you guys. It sounds like you're off to a great start.
Thank you.
Andrea is already committed to getting you millions of dollars
yes,
in new business.
That's right. I'm hitting the ground running for you.
And our friend in your second broad, what is it called? The broadcast?
Mm-hmm. The broadcast.
The broadcast.
The broadcast on February 22nd. Bridget Gaynor is going to be on, who has been named a favorite guest on the Steve Cochran Show.
Oh, you're announcing a winner already?
Well, no, the Stevie Awards are coming up soon. But okay. Bridget, we
love
Bridget.
She's a nominee, yeah.
With an
edge. She is pretty fabulous.
Yeah, she's
great.
Yes.
So congratulations to both of you. Continued success. Thanks for coming on and talking to us. And again, the website, Becky, is what?
It's CStrategiesLLC.com.
And we think you did a great job picking up Micah.
Oh, of course. My best pick ever.
There you go.
Nice.
We'll come back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
942, Steve Dale's here. And Steve's brought a friend, Zeus. Is Zeus winking at me?
Always. You know, we don't know what happened with Zeus. Colette Bradley is here from the Anti-Cruelty Society. And the thing is, well, first of all, Steve.
Yeah, I'm
we
right here.
Made radio.
Right here, Steve, right here.
Is he there?
Yeah, I'm
we
right here.
Made radio history.
What happened?
Last year, 12 months in the year, we adopted out, I do this once a month, 12
How about
dogs.
That? 12
Thank
baby.
You.
Woo! And our friend Colette, you were here for two or three of those, right?
I was.
Yeah.
Colette's with the Anti-Cruelty Society. And the thing is, Colette, you never know. I mean, the good news is you're there
yes.
for these dogs, but you don't know their stories always. The dog is just literally dumped at your doorstep, and you kind of have to figure out what you can figure out.
We got to get Zeus on CLTV. What camera can we get Zeus on?
Here, Zeus loves cameras.
Bring him over here, or you want to bring him over here?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Go over by Dave. Dave, bring Zeus over
come
by
here,
you.
Zeus.
And Dave, that's the secret.
Dave was already rolling on the floor with
that
Zeus.
That is the secret. When right, that happens, right. We get the dog adopted.
Maybe he can recreate that for CLTV.
If we get the Dave Ennett shot here, we should be able to get Zeus on camera.
Hi, Zeus.
A little farther back towards the back of the room.
Come here, Zeus.
So Zeus is a Mastiff-type dog.
Yeah, me too.
And has a little red-ish. Is that what you call that, Colette?
Yeah, he's got some brownish-red spots.
And he lost his eye.
He did.
I think is a character move. That looks totally, I mean, it adds to his character
yeah.
completely.
Yes,
I think the dog ought to be named Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, well, you could do that. Sure, get him a patch. I like the idea that he doesn't just walk in circles and bump into things, because that's got to be an adjustment.
Yes.
But he doesn't do that. So do you know anything about this dog's story?
So we know he came in because of some landlord issues. He is a bigger dog, and a lot of buildings have restrictions on breeds or size. So he's 91 pounds and still needs to gain some weight. You know, we can see his ribs a little bit too much, so we want to help him gain some weight while he's with us, and then again, you know, when he's in his new home. But at 91 pounds, he's a big guy already.
So. Yeah,
and a bunch of wagon tail going on behind us. That's perfect,
really
Dave.
Strong tail.
Right there, Dave. That's a perfect spot.
He's very happy.
So cute. He's good with kids, obviously, and families, would you say?
Well, we don't know for sure. We don't know his...
But immature adults. He's clearly good with immature adults.
Yeah. Clearly. He is doing well. We do have a note on here that he's unsure of men at first, but every
that
man...
That doesn't seem to be the case. I walked right up to Zeus. Dave
Bennett,
no, he abandoned me for Mary Sandberg Boyle.
Well, that's just good taste. That's had nothing to do with anything else.
But Zeus Wrangler here, what is this guy's name?
Michael.
Michael's doing a great job.
Yes, he's doing great with Michael. Yeah.
And Zeus came over to me. Nobody's more manly than me, right there?
Mike Jacobson. He went right over to Mike. I said, Mike should take him home.
Well, again, the manly explanation would be me, actually.
Well, yeah, of course, yeah.
And you walked over here with Zeus, no problems, no issues.
Nope.
Walked rather well. And then I saw Zeus. I gave Zeus a treat. And before I could say sit, Zeus was already sitting. So someone trained Zeus a bit. But at the same time, Zeus was apparently not treated particularly well.
Yeah, we can see some scarring on him. And he is underweight. So we believe, you know, there was maybe a little bit of abuse going on. Yeah. But, you know, he's resilient. He's doing great.
Is he putting on pounds?
I don't know. It's hard to say.
How long have you had him?
He's been with us since December.
Okay. Oh, you just got him then.
Yeah.
Okay. And what does Zeus like to eat? Everything?
Yeah, he didn't turn down a treat, so yeah. It should be easy to bulk him up a little bit.
So this is a big dog, so someone who has space and the ability to have a big dog.
And do you guys say about how old do you think he is?
Five.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a little guy then.
Yeah.
Five. He's got 5 good years in him. Easy.
At least, yeah. We hope. And is a lover.
Yeah.
This dog right now is giving Michael kisses, but this dog... is everyone he's met that I've seen, male, female, or in between, this dog is kissed.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you can't not have that, please.
I know.
All right, so what do we need to do?
If you're interested in adopting Zeus, he is available at our facility, 510 North LaSalle. We open at noon. And you can learn more about him on our website, which is www.anticruelty.org.
How many dogs in the house now?
We've got about 15 at that location. We have more at our Everyday Adoption Center in the South Loop PetSmart store.
But that's in part because you're asking Colette on a Monday. So what happened is, and it's great news, and it happens every weekend, all these dogs get adopted out.
You zero out?
Yeah. So, well, we don't zero out, but I sent Steve the dog we were planning to bring today on Friday, and she was adopted yesterday.
There were two scratches. Yeah, that's a good reason. So Edna, a lab mix, was supposed to be here, and then you sent me a picture of a chihuahua.
Edna.
She was great.
And then a chihuahua named Sweetie.
Edna was out trying to get some of the younger dogs married.
Right. And then I walked into the room this morning, and I was expecting a chihuahua named Sweetie.
Right.
And boy, if a chihuahua was ever on steroids, you know, this is the result of that.
Yes.
The dog named Zeus. But please, 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 we need to keep our record going. And Zeus needs a really good home. I mean, dogs who have been through whatever the heck Zeus has been through deserve it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What's a snack for a dog Zeus's size? Like a T-bone?
Probably.
Yeah. A neighbor. So the movie A Dog's Purpose, that's been very controversial because... someone on the crew took their phone out and recorded.
There's a backstory to this, though, right? I mean, the video, the video was shot a year and a half ago here in town.
That's the thing.
And it was just released prior to the movie being released. So it feels like somebody's got an extra. And having said that, the trainer certainly looks like he went over the line in that process. Mm-hmm. But there's also been video released. And the guy that is in charge of the production company for the movie is a well-known animal advocate who, you know, wouldn't put up with that kind of behavior.
All very true. And I was once on the board of the American Humane Association. Those are the folks that are on sets of movies like this that say no animals were harmed at the end of the movie.
And we say that at the end of the show.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And there was no...
That was true for us.
There was no representative on the set, I don't believe, it seems.
Well, there was a behavior that was brought up. Tell me if this rings true with either one of you guys. When a dog is trained to do a specific behavior, the dog locks into things like the spot where the behavior starts.
Sometimes.
And in this case, they said they moved the area where the behavior was trained to a completely different area. And that's why the dog was.
And they said that the day before.
But
the
does
dog,
that make sense?
Yeah, it can. And the dog in rehearsal the day before just jumped into the water fine.
Right.
And we're talking about this video that was shot that showed the trainer forcing the dog into the water. You know, any way you cut it, I wonder several things, including some of the things we mentioned, but I also wonder why they didn't say, okay, stop. This isn't working for this dog now.
Right.
I know the answer is probably money.
Well, I've been on
movie
sets,
stop.
Let's go.
Exactly. Why they didn't use CGI, computer-generated effects, in the first place? I don't know. I mean, these are all questions.
Why didn't the dog call his agent? There's a lot of questions that we have.
The dog did call his agent, and he said you deserve 10% more, and it didn't happen.
Now, what do we think of the movie?
Well, that's the thing. So I went to see the movie anyway. So I didn't protest. I thought, you know what? There's, as you said, there's something fishy going on here. Lots of questions to be asked. And no matter what, it didn't seem right. I said that. I was one of the first out there saying that. This is no way to train a dog. Having said that, that's one trainer, maybe a handful of hundreds of people, as you know, that work on a movie. You know, so
animals,
I thought,
I mean, animals in big movies are treated like A-list actors.
They typically are. Yeah. Yeah. So I thought, okay, I'm going to see this movie anyway. My problem is the movie kind of was depressing. So rather than being inspired about dogs, which is what I hoped.
Yeah, because the trailer was pretty compelling.
Movie, oh, my gosh. Yeah. The trailer was wonderful. Yeah. My problem with the movie is, for starters, dogs kept dying. So you had this one dog falling in love. It's a Lassie-Timmy relationship. It's anything you'd ever, everything you'd ever want to see in a relationship with a kid and a dog. And then the dog grows older, and the dog eventually dies.
So you got to go through the old Yeller thing over and over again.
Over and over and over. You know the dog is going to come back as a puppy again.
Yeah.
In 2 seconds, that's the thing, right, in the movie. The dog is reincarnated into another dog. But it was depressing to me that, okay, and I can see little kids being kind of depressed too.
I suppose.
You know, I'd say, for your money, go back to vintage Benji movies, because that never happened in Benji movies. They always had, and this movie had a happy ending too, and I do understand some of the great points about what a dog's purpose is in the movie and how dogs
the think. Story they're trying to tell.
Yeah. Like that.
Okay.
But kind mixed. Of a mixed.
Yeah. What's your favorite dog movie of all time?
And
you can't say Benji because you just said it.
Oh, darn it. Because it would be one of the Benji movies.
How about you, Colette? You got a favorite dog movie?
Ooh, I don't know. I'd have to think.
Benji stayed at our house once.
No.
Really?
The real Benji?
Yeah. Benji was stuck at the airport. Really? And Benji
was like a long layover?
Yeah. No, it was bad weather, and they couldn't get the flight out, and they couldn't get a hotel anywhere.
Plus, Benji couldn't operate the app because his paw was too big for the keys on his smartphone.
Yeah.
So Benji called. This is true. Benji called me and said, can we stay over? And I said, my gosh, of course. It was like 2 a.m. or something when I got the call. So I thought
Steve Dale has Benji come to his house.
So I thought my wife would like put on a fancy evening gown. I mean, this is Benji.
Right.
She didn't do that.
I was
ready to roll out a red carpet. I didn't have that.
Sure.
Benji gets out of the Uber and immediately I needed a plastic bag. And because the weather was so bad, it blew right across Lakeshore Drive.
Benji or the bag?
No, the bag. And if someone found what was in that bag and only knew it belonged to Benji?
Oh, it'd be on eBay.
I would think.
Yeah.
Benji did not do the dishes and wash our clothes and do all those things that I was expecting. I mean,
did
after
you hear
all,
Zeus
Benji.
Barking in the background?
Yeah.
Zeus, what is it? Is it Steve?
Zeus is like...
Is he fantasizing that Benji came over to his house again?
This is true.
Zeus is going, today is about me, not Benji and Steve Dale. Hello.
All right, what are you on the radio?
6:30 Sunday morning on WGN. We are talking your favorite topic, reptiles.
Yeah, well, okay.
Yes.
If you say so.
Yes.
Colette, always a delight to see you, and congratulations on the great work you guys do.
30 more seconds. This is the most important thing I didn't do. You have a big benefit coming up.
Yes. Pour Your Heart Out on February 23rd from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Union Lee Club of Chicago, and it's wine, beer, and hors d'oeuvres.
Dave, spirits. Wine and beer.
And for a great cause.
Yes. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Anticruelty.org.
Will there be will any of the animals be there?
No, this is an animal-free event.
Okay, so just people in tuxedos. It could be animals.
Absolutely. Please wear a tuxedo.
Raising money for the animals.
Yes. And how do we get tickets?
Anticruelty.org.
Anticruelty.org. Thanks, man. And thanks to your buddy Zeus.
Yeah. Let's get Zeus home.
Let's get Zeus adopted. Back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.